Hello, and welcome to Astrobloom Podcast with Vanya Banks. Join me as we journey into the earthly and celestial realms to uncover the mysteries of the universe and the healing power of plants and planets. By tuning into this podcast, you'll learn how to find wholeness within, integrate your shadow, and build a secure foundation to unlock the full expression of your authentic self. Hello, and welcome to the Astrobloom Podcast. If you haven't been here before, my name is Vanya Banks, and I am your host, as well as spiritual astrologer and healing guide. So this episode has been brewing beneath the surface for quite some time. I have been really consciously tuning into, and before it was conscious, it was subconscious, tuning into the energy of the asteroid Ceres in astrology and how she's really connected to our initiation into grief and transformation in life. Now, I'm going to get into all of this in much more detail, but essentially, I wanted to first talk a little bit about grief and with the consciousness, of course, that in this time during the holiday season, grief can be something that is, you know, experienced by people on various levels. And so I just want to, first of all, send you love and compassion if you are one of those people. I also know that collectively, there's a lot of grief being felt right now due to world affairs. And while there can be, you know, no silver lining in what is currently collectively happening, I did want to shed some light on grief in this episode that might make you think about it in a different way. Grief is really a wildly transformative process that happens, which is able to show us the cyclical nature of life. If we think about grief, it is what happens as the result of losing something. Most people tend to think of grief as something that only happens when someone we love or someone that's close to us passes away. But grief can happen in so many other ways. It is just the end of something. It doesn't have to be the loss of a loved one, although, of course, that is one of the most, you know, intense processes of grief. But it can be the loss of a home, the loss of a job, the loss of belonging. There's intense grief that comes from, you know, potentially people who are immigrants or refugees. There is grief that happens when a relationship ends, whether that is because someone passed away or because of divorce or separation or conflict or whatever it might be. Someone moving away, you know, these are all ways that grief comes into our lives. And while grief is such a, you know, intense and deep process that happens, at the same time, grief is what allows us to go into the depths so that we can actually feel the highs of life and so that we can fully experience what it feels to be human. Because to be human is to be part of nature. And to be part of nature is to accept that there is a cyclical nature to life. If we just observe the seasons, if we observe animals, plants out in the world, there is a cyclical nature. Something always has to die. Energy is just transformed into another form of energy at the end of the day. And so this is what grief is able to teach us. With letting go, there is room for new life. There is new wisdom that is gained as we go through this process. And there is a bigger capacity to feel, to experience life. Again, when we think about grief, one of my favorite teachers on this topic is Francis Weller, and I will link some of his books and other teachings in the show notes. But he talks about grief First of all, he talks about us being a society that is quite sort of monotone in our emotional expression. Now, of course, this is just a generalized statement, so don't take it too personally if you don't identify with this. But as a society, especially in more Western cultures, we tend to be really afraid of death, of letting go, of change, of transformation. And transformation and grief go hand in hand because at the end of the day, again, grief is just having to let go of something. So it is a way to honor change. It's a way to honor transformation. And so, for example, in our society, especially, in Western cultures, and this is, of course, just how society is built, and it's not, I'm not trying to blame anyone. I'm not saying that, you have the responsibility to fix this problem because it's a larger societal issue of the way that our society is built. And, collectively, we actually need to think about how to transform this, but it doesn't start, with one person. But essentially, if you think about, everything that represents aging or decay or this process of letting go, we tend to kind of hide it away. We tend to compartmentalize it. We tend to separate ourselves from it. So even if we think about, our elders, our aging population, because of course of the demands placed on the working class of raising children in isolation, going from, of course, living in communities originally, how we're supposed to actually live in society and help each other take care of our children and take care of the elders and all live sort of in community together and share the burdens of child rearing and also caring for the elders. We, of course, don't have that structure in our society. We live in very isolated, single family homes. And so we tend to also have this fear, right, of death, of aging. And in that sense, we put our elders in long-term care homes. We put them in retirement homes. We fear and we judge, people who go through divorce, who end up separated. Of course, things like this are changing, because people are, I think, waking up to the fact that there is a cyclical nature to everything. And no matter what, everything in life has to end at some point. All relationships end in grief, whether that is while we are living or when we pass from this life. So, in that sense, we live very separated from grief. And so, when we have to go through a transformative process, when we are initiated into grief, it is often really difficult to move through the stages and to process it because we simply don't know how in a lot of ways. Now, this isn't going to be an episode of how to process grief, but it is an episode about how you might be initiated into grief in your life based on your unique astrology. It's also an episode just talking about, my experience with grief and just some learnings that I've been able to integrate. So, first of all, talking about grief. Frances Weller talks about a few different ways of sort of being initiated into grief, and these are called the gates of grief. So, there's five main gates, and then there is a sixth sort of optional gate. So, these are sort of entry points into how we might be initiated into feeling, the need to let go of something or feeling for or being forced to let go of something, being pushed into these depths of human emotion. And by being pushed into the depths of carrying grief and carrying sorrow, we move ourselves away from that emotional monotone expression because we go into the shadows, we go into the lows, the emotional lows. And by doing this, we actually expand our capacity to feel. Because, like everything in the world, like everything in astrology, I always say this, but there can be no light without the dark. And so, if we cannot feel grief, if we can't feel sadness, if we can't feel pain, We also can't feel joy. We can't feel peace. We can't feel all of these high vibrational energies that we strive to feel. Before I go into the five gates, I did want to compare this briefly, and I will talk about this journey in another episode in more depth, but I did want to compare this briefly to, a plant medicine journey I recently underwent. So I did do ayahuasca with a certified shaman, and this is exactly my experience with this amazing plant, and this amazing spirit is that plant, because it is actually a very Plutonian plant and really Neptunian plant, Pluto being the shadows, Neptune being that oneness, that connection to divine, those like high vibrational feelings of peace and joy and divine love. This is exactly the experience that I had, because basically what ayahuasca does is it takes you into the depths of your shadow. It makes you face your deepest fears. It makes you also face the most intense physical discomfort, emotional pain, mental suffering, and only through surrendering to these depths, to actually allowing yourself to feel this and to be where you're at, can you then receive that high vibrational feeling of being at one with everything and understanding that you are divine and that there is this divine love that surrounds you and this beauty. And this is exactly the same process that I would say grief initiates in us. And so the gates of grief involve, first of all, the first gate is everything we love, we will eventually lose. So this is just a way of saying that, yes, like I said, all relationships, because relationships are primarily how we grow in our human life, we will lose in some way. So they will end. Even if we are in a relationship for our entire lives, someone has to pass away first, right? So everything we love, we will eventually lose. The second gate of grief is the places of us that have not known love. And so these are the places that maybe we haven't loved in ourselves. It's often like our shadow aspects. It's also the places of us that have been rejected by others. And these are the deep wounds of abandonment, of rejection that may be experienced throughout life, and especially potentially in the childhood. I see these wounds really coming up in people that have strong, for example, Aquarius placements in their chart, definitely Cancer Chirons. There's this need to find belonging, right? And then potentially being rejected. For feeling like the other in some ways. The third gate of grief is the sorrows of the world. So this can be loss of species, extinction. It can be loss of resources. Of course, right now we're living through one of these instances with everything that's happening in the world, all of the innocent lives that are being lost. And this is something that can serve as our initiation into grief. The fourth gate is everything that we expected and didn't receive. So I would say that this is really connected to, again, maybe especially our relationships, but I would say like this to me really speaks like inner child. If we think about, maybe we actually weren't, one of our parents didn't like want us. So it can be a subconscious belief that maybe we don't even have the right to be here, right? So we came into this world expecting acceptance and expecting love, and we maybe subconsciously didn't really get that. It can also be a mismatch of a need of our caregivers not meeting our needs. So let's say we had parents or caregivers that were super present physically, but they were not emotionally present at all. And we actually really needed them to be emotionally present. Of course, every child needs emotional presence, but I would say if you have a lot of water in your chart, especially if you have a water moon, it is like a necessity, not just like a nice to have. So, yeah, let's say your parents or your caregivers or whoever was raising you gave you all of the physical affection that you needed. They gave you all the physical security you needed, but you didn't get any emotional needs met, then this can actually be an initiation into grief because it's realizing that, yeah, there's parts of you that didn't get what they needed. And so there's a lot of emotions that can arise with this. And there's a sorrow and a grieving of what should have been, right? Of what you should have received. The fifth gate is ancestral grief. So this is grief that is sort of carried within us, in our DNA, passed down through generations. It can be the grief of, like I said, immigration, displacement, disconnection to land, to culture. It can be, all sorts of grief that our ancestors that came before us experienced. It can be poverty, it can be conflict. All of these things that get kind of programmed into our DNA and we subconsciously carry with us can be, of course, awakened and needs to be processed. And this is actually something that I've been working quite a bit with personally. And I'll get into that in a little bit. But the sixth gate that is sort of, Francis Waller talks about it being like an optional gate, is trauma. So trauma, as you've heard me say before, is something that should have happened and didn't. So in a sense, it is that it's similar to that fourth gate of like something we expected and didn't receive, but it's also the opposite. It's something that we didn't expect and should not have happened that did happen. And so then it's almost kind of the opposite of that fourth gate in the sense that we have to grieve the fact that this thing, this horrible thing that happened to us, shouldn't have happened. And there is a reconciliation that needs to happen of, the past of the events that occurred. So, yeah, like I mentioned, I guess to kind of coming into it from an astrological perspective, I think in my own personal experience and in the experience of my clients, I've really been putting this theory to the test since Ceres, the asteroid that's linked to the goddess of Demeter in Greek mythology, really started coming into kind of my consciousness and making herself known. I've been testing this theory a lot with my clients in my own life. And I've done a lot of research on sort of past events in my life and the things that have happened and how they coincide to her movements and her activity in astrology. And I've really come to the realization that, so first of all, for those of you that don't know who Ceres is, I'll talk about that just to give you a bit of background. But like I said, Ceres is an asteroid. So she's a celestial body. She moves through the different signs, just like any other planet would in the zodiac. And so while she is currently in the sky in Sagittarius, of course, she's conjunct Mars and was recently conjunct the sun, illuminated by the sun's rays, bringing the truth to the surface around her energy, Sagittarius being all about truth. She is, of course, yeah, we're all collectively experiencing her in Sagittarius right now, but we also personally experience her energy wherever she is in our chart. And like I said originally, where Ceres is in your chart is likely the area of your life where you will be initiated into a transformation and into grief. So for me personally, Ceres has really come through in my own relationships. She's in my seventh house. And the reason Ceres, so you might hear Ceres explained, as or Demeter, these two are sort of interchangeable. Ceres is simply the Roman equivalent of Demeter. You might hear these two archetypes explained as like the goddess of fertility And I wouldn't say that that's wrong. Ceres is simultaneously the thing that nurtures us on like a very almost like physical level. Like it gives us sustenance. But at the same time, it's where we have to learn to let go, and we have to understand the cyclical nature of this area of our life. And when I say where, I mean the house that it is in. Of course, the sign is going to have an impact too, but I'm really talking about the house here because that's the area of life that she impacts. So in Greek mythology, Ceres is Demeter. And if you know about the story of Demeter and Persephone, here's a little refresher. If you don't, this is going to probably shine a lot of light on, what I've been talking about here. But essentially, the mythology of Demeter and Persephone is the story of the triple goddess archetype. Now, the triple goddess archetype is the mother, maiden, and crone. And this is the way that feminine energy evolves throughout life. And it's especially, pertinent for those of us who identify as women, who are primarily feminine beings, because these are stages of life that every woman goes through. So beginning as the maiden, right? And then becoming the mother, giving birth to something, whether that is a physical child or, a business or a book or whatever, there's like that creation that happens, and the maiden actually has to die in some way. There's a transformation that happens there. So again, transformation, there's a grieving of the maiden that has to occur. Then from the mother is that nurturer, right? The maiden is more of the potential that's there. The mother is the nurturer. And then after the mother has nurtured her children, we go into that later stage of life where there is no potential sort of for creating life. It's more about the wisdom that has been accumulated through the cyclical nature of life, through these transformations throughout life. And it is the crone that then emerges. And the crone is that wise woman. The crone is the woman or the man, the wise man, who has seen life. They've experienced life, right? This wise person, if we're going to be, non-binary about it, this wise person has experienced life. They've experienced so many different stages of life. They've gone through it. They've gone through the lows and the highs. And they have all of this wisdom as a result of that lived experience. And now they get to, share that with others. And they also get to live their life based on that experience, the rest of their life based on that experience. So they become the elder, and they contribute to society with their wisdom. And so this is that triple goddess archetype. And the triple goddess archetype also is symbolic, of course, of sort of the seasons of nature, right? Of how our world functions. The maiden being that potential of spring and sort of summer, like blooming into that maturity, right? Then the mother, of course, is when we start to have like fruits and flowers on trees and things like that, reproducing, life. And then the crone is the winter season and the fall season of like when that life force energy begins to wane, and we experience, letting go and decay and things like that. So in mythology, Demeter is the mother, and her daughter Persephone is the maiden. And these two actually represent one, the two aspects of one sort of person, if we think about it in that sense. It's really just two aspects of the psyche. And so in the myth of Demeter and Persephone, what happens is they're living in this blissful union and they're out foraging for flowers. And what happens is Pluto, who is also in Greek mythology, Hades, Lord of the underworld, actually kidnaps Persephone into the underworld to be his wife. So this is where she enters that partnership so that she can actually prepare for, becoming a mother in some way. But since Demeter is already this mother archetype, what actually happens is we have Persephone which is the maiden archetype of Demeter, going into the underworld to be released. She needs to be transformed. That part of the psyche, that part of the identity, needs to die in some way to be reborn as the crone. It is only through the underworld that we can actually obtain the inner crone. So, by allowing a part of ourselves, that sort of more naive, that innocent part of us that has not seen death, it has not been met with grief, it has not been met with decay, right? Pluto symbolizing literally the underworld, death. We cannot achieve that wisdom. So it is only through grief and through letting go and through transformation. It's a very scorpionic energy, Pluto ruling the sign of Scorpio, that this process can be achieved. So it is only through grief that we can actually obtain our inner crone and our wisdom that we are then able to share with the world and experience the fullness of that triple goddess archetype. This story also shapes our the story of the seasons, because when Persephone, because what actually ends up happening is they come to an agreement, so Pluto and Demeter, and essentially they end up kind of sharing Persephone. She lives with her mother for half of the year on Earth, and that is when we have spring and summer. And then she descends into the darkness of the underworld to be with her husband from fall and winter. And so this also represents that the way that energy sort of waxes and wanes in the spring, summer, waxing in the spring and summer, and then waning in the fall and winter. So really, it is the story of the fact that all energy, us included, plants included, right? Everything in nature has a season of new life, of growth, of potential, of fruiting. And then it has a season of letting go, of decay, of falling apart, of experiencing the depths so that we can clear space for new life. So, in saying that, if we take what we've learned about grief, if we take what we've learned from Demeter and Persephone, we know that Ceres in our chart is this invitation to let go of the maiden. Ceres is where we are invited to release some part of our past and are met with the shadows and met with the underworld and met with this alchemizing nature of grief so that we can acquire our inner crone. And so once we surrender to this initiation, this is actually the house in our chart where we become very wise. We become the crone and we have lots of wisdom to share with others. But we have to surrender. And so if you want to look at, I'm going to talk about sort of her energy in each of the houses. But if you want to look at where this energy shows up in your chart, you're going to go to astro.com. I'll put the link in the show notes. You can make sure to create an account. It stores your info that way, so I would definitely recommend doing that. And then you're going to go to creating an extended chart. Scroll down all the way to the bottom when it gives you options. There's going to be options to add additional objects, and you're going to click on Ceres and then show the chart. And what you're going to look for in your chart is a little sickle. So like the sickle that you would use to cut down grain. That's shown also like in, I was going to say in the Virgo symbol, but I think she just carries wheat. But yeah, anyway, it looks like a sickle. So just look for that and see what pi section it is in and look for the number of that pi section. Now, The one thing that I also wanted to add before I go into the astrology is, basically by entering the underworld, we are able to face our fear of death, right? Of something ending. And in meeting with death, we also face our mortality in a lot of ways. We face Saturn. We face that limitation of the fact that we are only in this body, in this life, once, right? I mean, astrology is based on the fact that we are energy and we do reincarnate in some way, and our eternal self lives on and maybe comes back to Earth, right? But we face our mortality and we realize our immortality simultaneously. So we realize that we are also eternal. And it is really that process of meeting with the end of something in order to realize that there is always something else that comes after. There is that cyclical nature. A seed has to crack its shell. The shell has to disintegrate, right? The seed coating has to decay so that the sprout can actually emerge, so that new life can emerge. So if you have, first I'll talk about the seventh house just because that's where my Ceres is, and then we'll go to the other houses. So in my own experience, I've been met with Ceres energy in some of my closest relationships. So for me, one of the things I haven't really openly talked about a ton on this podcast is the fact that in 2020, 2019, 2020, was sort of a really dark, deep night of what's it called? Like the dark night of the soul. That's the word I was looking for. But it all kind of occurred. I think really what initiated me into it is several of my closest friends moving away within months of each other and moving to places where I knew they weren't going to come back. And so this was a big awakening for me in the sense that it really woke me up to my mortality, and it made me think about, what am I doing with my life? Like, who am I living this life for? Am I living it for me, or am I living it for other people? And that was Ceres at work. When I look back to that time, even looking at it astrologically, I know that she was activating my seventh house. And even when I look at my astrocartography, specific points in, like, for example, in my marriage, in my relationship, there's key moments in our relationship that have been influenced with Ceres. And of course, this is, I would be lying if I said that marriages aren't incredibly hard work and that you're not met with this cycle of death and rebirth every single day of your life. Especially being in a relationship for, since my early 20s, who I am now and who I was then is so incredibly different. And the same goes for my partner, of course. And so it's a constant meeting of the fact that we are never the same. We are always changing. And our willingness to either evolve together or evolve apart is something that's persistently met in our relationship. And it's really the basis of all relationships, right? So, yeah, this is something that I've also, of course, been met with the passing of my grandma last year. When I actually looked at, where Ceres energy was at, not just in my own chart, but also in astrocartography, she was very present with me in those days of my grandma passing when I had traveled to Croatia to say goodbye to her. And at the same time, this passing and this loss of her initiated so much ancestral grief for me around being an immigrant, a first generation immigrant, and also being a child who lived through very early conflict, in, a civil conflict in former Yugoslavia. So she has been incredibly prevalent in my own life. And of course, I'm talking about her right now as she is moving through my first house, in Sagittarius. So bringing the truth out to you guys. So, yeah, if Ceres is in your first house, this means that she is very much going to be a part of your personality in a lot of ways. You are someone who is going to be met with a lot of transformation on the personal level. And of course, because we cannot exist solely on our own, this means that she will also be affecting your relationships because the first house is in opposition to the seventh house. And so it is always the self versus the other. So, in order for you to fully own your identity and sort of who you are here to be and show up in the world as yourself, you will have to integrate the lessons of Ceres into your personality. And that might also mean that you are then able to help others move through grief and personal transformation in a lot of ways. If she's in your second house, this would be grief that is initiated through the loss of property, the loss of possessions, the loss of something that we have. It can also be a loss of self-worth, self-esteem. The second house is all about the things that we own, but it's also our self-worth, our body. The third house is going to have to do with a loss of communication. Maybe there's a transformation of the way that you have to communicate with others. The third house is also the house of siblings, neighbors. So there could be a loss of those types of relationships, the sibling-like relationships, siblings in your life, neighbors. It could be, moving out of a neighborhood that you've felt really close to. It could be, loss of place in some way, loss of community, but that more like closer community. In the fourth house, Ceres will initiate you into transformation by inviting you to meet a loss potentially around family, around sort of inner security, around emotional security. The fourth house is family, its roots. And so there might really be this like disconnection from a sense of belonging, in some ways. There could be a relocation that happens. It could also have something to do with your relationship with your mother, because the fourth house is more of that mother archetype, that mother energy, that nurturing energy. So there's also a connection to that inner child, right? And so there could be some grief that needs to be worked through on that emotional level. It has to do with the inner child of maybe the needs that you had and you didn't actually get met. The fifth house is all about the things that we create in the world, the things that we use our sexual or creative energy for. So you could be met with loss and grief through your relationship with the things that you birth. So whether that is children, whether that is again businesses, art, it's whatever you're using your creative energy for. And there might be some a need to let go of that. So it could be like that your major grief comes through like empty nest syndrome, or maybe there's a difficult relationship with a child, or maybe there's a difficult also relationship in terms of like, because the fifth house is also the house of romance and the house of like really that expression of the inner child. So maybe there's a loss of talent in some way, or there's a loss of passion for life. Like there could be a more kind of personal inner experience of that energy. The sixth house means that, they're essentially because the sixth house is really like our daily routines, our health, our the way that we are also of service. Ceres can show up here to teach you how to let go of a certain way of kind of showing up in the world and of being of service. So this could be a change in your vocation in some ways of like your not vocation so much, but yeah, the way that you are of service. So it could be a change in like how you approach also your daily habits, your routines, your health. It could be health issues that really force you into a sense of surrender, and have you move through alchemizing that grief into wisdom that you can then share by being of service with others. For example, it could show up even like as anxiety, maybe health anxiety, things like that in the sixth house, especially because Virgo is very, that's the energy of Virgo, and Virgo is very much connected to health, but that connection between the mind and body. In the seventh house, I already talked about that. It's one-on-one relationships. In the eighth house, this has to do with the resources that we share with others. So not only is it, the energy that we share with others through really intimate acts like sex, it's also physical resources that we share with others. So again, this is kind of connected to that energy of the second house, but it is more about maybe loss of shared resources in some way, loss of intimacy, loss of trust, feelings of betrayal, things like that that initiate us into grief. The ninth house is going to be a loss of perhaps hope, optimism. There's also a loss of personal philosophies, belief systems. Maybe it is a loss of it's a transformation of personal belief systems and philosophies. So maybe you might be born into a certain religion, let's say, or school of thought, and there is a certain time in your life where this just doesn't apply anymore, and you're sort of really awoken to the fact that this doesn't align with you, and you have to go through the process of really letting go of that identity and that identification with it and release that. So there's a transformation there that happens. The 10th house is going to be definitely transformation through sort of your experience with the other world, outer world, and your legacy. So this definitely is like vocation. It is the things that we are leaving behind, the things that we are building, our legacy that we're leaving. And so this could be, yeah, a career change, like a major transition in our career. It could be a change of maybe like a business that you've built, having to let go of something like that, having to let go of a certain public persona or identity. And this can also happen when Ceres is, for example, transiting like your midheaven. So just to keep in mind, this can be activated by her energy as she's moving through the sky. In the 11th house, Ceres will initiate you by perhaps having you go through certain transformations in your wider community. So the 11th house is not only the house of like friendships and larger communities, but also like our vision for the future. So your ideals about the future and what you really want to call in, because that is also connected to who you surround yourself with, right? They always say that you should surround yourself with people who have like similar ideals and you and visions as you, because that helps you then manifest that reality, because it also helps you understand and see that it is possible. So you're going to likely be initiated, I mean, if you haven't already, into having to transform your community, having to also transform your vision for the future, maybe, and surrender into the fact that there might be a greater plan in place. And finally, in the 12th house, Ceres will initiate you into transformation by perhaps having a loss of faith in some way. The 12th house is the house of everything that is unseen, right? So it can be a transformation of, it can be a transformation of, yeah, like a faith in some way. It can be a transformation of, it could be things like mental illness, for example. This is the energy associated with Pisces. Excuse me. This is the energy associated with Pisces. And Pisces is all about the energetics, the unseen. It's about feeling. It's about, again, that connection between body and mind, the axis of the sixth and 12th house. So it's an initiation of needing to completely surrender to the divine. And this might come through a loss of faith or the need to find a new sense of faith in something or a new trust in the divine and an understanding that there is a greater plan. There is something that you might not be able to see or control, but you have to surrender to. And that is the 12 houses of Ceres. So I would love to hear your thoughts on this podcast. If you check out your chart, let me know whether it resonates. Send me a message. You can reach me on Instagram or send me an email. All the details are in the show notes. And yeah, I just hope that this episode shines some light on something that can be, of course, a really, really difficult thing to see a silver lining in. But I truly do believe that without grief, we really cannot experience what it fully means to be human, because we cannot accept that cyclical nature of life without having to let go of something. And spoken like a true Scorpio rising and Scorpio stellium, I feel like it's just the full encapsulation of that energy of the underworld, of the invitation to let go, to meet our shadows, to meet our biggest fears, and to allow ourselves to be transformed by them and to rise like a phoenix from the ashes. So I hope that you have a lovely holiday season. And if it is a season that is difficult for you, as it I know it is for many, I hope you take great care of yourself and sending you lots and lots of love. I will see you in the new year.